From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 3 days after the Super Bowl, it's the hoopla over the raunchy halftime show and nasty ads, not the great nail-biter of a game that everyone's still talking about around the water cooler and the kitchen table. To review, with help from Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson bared her breast, Nelly grabbed his crotch, Kid Rock wore the American flag as a poncho, and everybody talked dirty. The ads weren't much better. Kids swearing, a groin-biting dog, a flatulent horse, and the dangers of a four-hour erection. The FCC is investigating whether the Super Bowl's peek-a-boob moment violated decency laws. Film director Spike Lee called the Jackson stunt a new low of attention-getting antics by entertainers and wonders what's gonna be next. Spike Lee is not the only one wondering that this week. Tonight on Point, the Super Bowl festival of vulgar sex and Madison Avenue cynicism with flesh and trash talk everywhere. Why did this night hit a raw nerve? Is sex and bad attitude all we have in common anymore? Has American popular culture gone to hell in a halftime show, or is this much ado about nothing new? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Columbia, South Carolina, is Kathleen Parker, nationally syndicated columnist with Tribune Media Services. Her column today is entitled Another Reason to Shoot Your TV. Good evening and welcome, Kathleen Parker.
Hey, how are you?
Well, great. Thanks for joining us. Also with us from Providence, Rhode Island, is Froma Harrop, nationally syndicated columnist at the Providence Journal. Her column today is entitled The Sewer Pipe Was Open Long Before Halftime. Good evening and welcome, Froma Harrop.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for being with us. From here, so your response was, oh, my gosh, I've been protected out in cable land. Here I am back in the world of network television, and it's terrible.
Yes. Yes. I have TiVo. I have Netflix. I subscribe to Netflix. I subscribe to premium cable. And all these things have allowed me to protect myself from real-time network television. And every now and then there's an event like the Super Bowl where I'm really there watching it, and I don't have the fast forward button at my disposal, and it was pretty alarming, I must say.
Froma Harrop, give us the fast forward version of the alarming moments. Was it halftime when you started rocking in your chair, or earlier? Walk us through your trail of tears here.
Oh, it was much earlier, and it really didn't even it was the ads, and the ads, the most appalling ads, had nothing to do with sex. I thought the sickest one had to be that Lay's chip ad, in which two elderly people were fighting over a bag of chips. An old man trips an elderly woman, sends her sprawling onto the ground. He then digs his cane into the small of her back.
Not too pretty. A kind of mean cruelty right there.
Yeah, ugly, but and stupid at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, it wasn't the only ad that we had going on here. There was some kind of consistent theme, Kathleen Parker, that I was hearing, seeing in the ads right through this whole Super Bowl, which is supposed to be the showcase of all the greatest ads and great advertising ingenuity. And yet it seemed cynical, mean-spirited, crude. Am I missing something here? Did you see it the same way?
Well, I must say, I was charmed with the very first commercial. It was the one where the cute little donkey wants to be a big horse, and the Budweiser horse. And I thought,
wants to be a Clydesdale.
Great,
yeah.
You know, they've got a clue. You know, they finally acknowledge that you know there's an age appropriate kind of commercial to do. That there are people sitting around in family groups and church groups. By the way, they organized church parties around this whole event. Especially in North Carolina, because they were all excited, right?
Right, sure.
So I was totally charmed. And then the next one, of course, is, well, you know what? I don't even like to talk like this. In order to describe these ads, I have to say things that I don't normally say in polite company, nor do I even think about it. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been amused by little boy bathroom humor, and yet that seems to have been sort of the level of intent here. It was just, it was mostly, I completely agree with excuse me, with From It was ugly and stupid. And, you know, the next one was the carriage scene. Do I need to describe that? With the horse who'd had, I guess, chili for dinner. I don't know.
We won't make you describe it. here it is.
It's absurd that we're talking about this.
Well it is, but we're trying to figure out what's going on with the culture. Let's just get a little clip of that. It's a Bud Light commercial, a romantic sleigh ride going on. And, well, here we go.
This is so romantic.
Well, it's about to get a little bit more romantic. A little candlelight.
Oh.
And a little Bud Light.
Ooh.
Ooh. Do you smell barbecue?
Oh! Fresh, smooth, real Bud Light.
Cool, a rocket sleigh.
And suddenly, 89.8 million viewers around and beyond the country, you know, get that with their Super Bowl from Harrop. What are we supposed to make of this?
That doesn't make me want to go out and buy one of those beers.
Not real quick. Not real fast. Not real fast. And then the other thing that struck me from Kathleen, I couldn't help notice the kind of woman bashing in the ads. I mean, again, am I thin-skinned? Am I old-fashioned or new-fashioned? I'm not sure. But there's an ad where a referee is taking a mountain of abuse from an angry coach. Someone wonders, how does he take that? And then you flash to his home, and it's his wife just screaming at him in this sort of most old... I mean, now, maybe that's how men... maybe that's what men deal with, but... Is it really? Is that some very old-fashioned characterization going on here, from?
I think the Super Bowl has always had a lot of you know, mild sexism, which was pretty much in good fun. I remember past Super Bowls, you'd have a lot of nurses, you know, a lot of commercials featuring sexy nurses.
I mean, you start with cheerleaders in the Super Bowl, so it's not such an extension to be.
But the ad you just played was. You know, was sexist beyond words, really, and a lot of the beating up of elderly women, I thought was pretty bad, and.
But then again, the dog chomping on the.
This is the Bud Light commercial where the dog bites the man's groin.
And that's yet another image that keeps getting replayed, you know, in various forms. That it's humorous to do what is essentially suggestive of sexual mutilation. You know, that the guys are not finding that very funny.
And then throughout, children are involved in the kind of cynical attitude, the bitter attitude, or the just kind of degraded attitude. There's a Chevy commercial where they're, announcing an American Revolution and some very flashy new cars. And what we get is scenes of kids with each with a mouthful of soap. Okay. And then here's where we go with it.
The new Chevrolets, an American revolution.
Chevrolet's cars are so great they make American children swear. Isn't that great, Kathleen?
Yeah, isn't that precious? No, our kids are cynical beyond belief, and it's certainly no wonder. But I don't know if anybody here read Jonah Goldberg today, but he was actually talking about the bump and grind session that we're going to get to in a little while. But he said, you know, he grew up, he's a little younger than I am, and he grew up with this kind of exposure constantly. And to him, he admitted it's just no big deal. Of course, he's got a child who's only 1 year old, and I think he'll change his tune as this little girl gets a little bit older.
Well, and of course, that's the halftime show you're referring to. And we've had all kinds of halftime shows with the Super Bowl, you know, some of them memorable, some memorably awful. But in my memory, this one struck a new kind of low for raunchiness, for just vulgarity. Everybody grabbing everywhere, every song, every dance, sexually charged, and not in a very interesting, nuanced way whatsoever. And then, of course, the scene at the end where Justin Timberlake is singing, I bet I'll have you naked by the end of this song. And presto, what do you know? He rips off what seems to be a kind of detachable leather bras kind of thing. And there's Janet Jackson's breast with some sort of little nipple ornament on it. And voila, here we are talking to our kids about things they have never seen before.
Here we are talking about nipple ornaments. This is a first for me.
By that time, you know, all sense of propriety had been lost. It was almost to me, it didn't even matter. It wasn't one of the more offensive parts of that show.
Mm-hmm. No, it was really just the exclamation point, wasn't it?
I've looked forward to the half times in the past, and the one 2 years ago after 9/11 was really quite moving, and this one was just stupid, you know, from beginning to end.
Now, CBS has come out and said they deeply regret the incident, that they attended all the rehearsals, they had no idea. But if you look back at the MTV website from January 28th, headline, Janet Jackson's Super Bowl show promises shocking moments. I mean, surprise, surprise. Who are we kidding here?
That event looked like it had been rehearsed about 100 times to me. I mean...
Well, also, I think, you know, if you reach out and grab up somebody's clothing, it's not going to just... You know, just tear off like it was attached by Velcro.
Especially when it's made of leather. That was some pretty heavy-duty clothing.
Yeah, it's worn in a fairly uniform way, and the decor option that followed seemed to suggest a little planning, at least.
A little, at least. So here we are. The FCC is looking at this. The FCC Chairman Michael K. Powell, Colin Powell's son, says he's going to personally direct the probe. They're looking at indecency. You know, Viacom owns CBS and MTV, which produced that halftime show. Everybody's apologizing. Everybody's saying we had no idea. But there's an uproar about this. From it, you say that the goalposts have kind of been moved with this big national event. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, what I meant was that the audience had been so softened up by those gross commercials that by the time you got to the halftime. You know, anything went. There was not much shock left for the audience.
Well, and that's kind of the way it's gone in the culture, hasn't it? Too. Yeah. It's just you get used to it, you get inured to it, and there's nothing really shocking left to do.
That Osama bin Laden couldn't have made this up, and I guess the implication there, America gets criticized for having a corrosive culture. Well, Exhibit A.
You know, it was really beyond what I imagined, and I don't come at this, you know, with a prudish point of view. This was to be a big national family event, and there was just so little discretion as to what they did, so little sense of decorum or what was appropriate for that particular event.
And Kathleen, you write that it boils down to, in particular, I mean, it may not be fun for many people, but there's this issue of age appropriateness. This is a family event. I mean, it starts early. People sit around with their kids watching the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't watch much TV around here, and this was we kind of said, hey, let's all get together and watch the Super Bowl. And as I said, I've gotten lots of email today in response to my column. I'm sure Froma has too. And they were, you know, people were talking about how they had. These church groups get together and plan parties and barbecues around the whole thing, and they had to turn the TV off, you know, as soon as halftime started, as soon as they saw what direction it was going, they had to turn it off. But there's no respect for the fact that there's a certain tacit agreement between viewer and entertainment provider that at certain times and in certain circumstances, certain contexts, you have an expectation of appropriateness. And it's not prudish at all. I mean, I've had so many people preface their criticism with, you know, I don't mean to be a prude, but there's nothing
too,
prudish
yeah.
about objecting to what is clearly objectionable.
From let me ask you then, are you, what's your plan? To retreat to cable and TiVo, or are you going to pick up the Tipper Gore torch here? Did Tipper have it right after all?
I'm trying to remember exactly what Tipper Gore was saying. I think...
She was worried about music, I think.
She was campaigning against dirty lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah, music lyrics. Yes, I believe in freedom of expression and even stupid, gross things. I think, you know, I think people have a right to do that. I'm not into censoring these things. I'm very interested in the mental process that was at work. Yeah. That allowed this to come on during the Super Bowl.
And there it was. From Harrop, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to go into the break with Justin Timberlake performing Rock Your Body at halftime at Sunday's Super Bowl show. 3 days on. What do you think? Are you steamed? Nonplussed? Join us 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I can't wait to
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Super Bowl Festival of Vulgar Sex and Madison Avenue Cynicism. You can join our conversation tonight. Did you have to explain nipple rings, bikini wax, and the dangers of a four-hour erection to your children on Sunday night? Or did they have to explain all that to you? And is this what American popular culture has come to? Or is this just a high-profile snapshot of what it's been for a long time? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from Camden, South Carolina, by Kathleen Parker. She's a nationally syndicated columnist for Tribune Media Services. Her column today is entitled Another Reason to Shoot Your TV. And now from Tucson, Arizona, by Jacqueline Jackson. She's executive producer of The Body Project, a documentary project looking at the ways in which cultural images affect female health and well-being. Jacqueline Jackson, good to have you on the show again.
Thank you.
So what were you thinking as you watched on Sunday night, Jacqueline Jackson? You're looking at a broad range of issues that have to do with women and sexuality and the culture. Did this set your teeth on edge, or do you have bigger fish to fry?
Well, actually, in some ways, I thought it was very good. I think there's a huge underbelly in America of all this that's as obese as the people are, and it bursts through the airwaves, if you will.
So you're glad to see it out there on the table for everyone to stare at?
To some extent. I think there's a huge tendency in our culture. There is an amazing gap in our culture, especially around sexuality issues, between the pictures that are saturating us from all around and the words that we use to talk about sex. There's a huge, huge gap.
So what's the gain? What's the benefit in putting it right up front on the Super Bowl?
I think to maybe bring attention to it, because, I mean, part of the Body Project is really looking at the ways all these images impact us and how they tie back into health issues across the lifespan. And when you look at some of the stats on sexuality, you've got gonorrhea is one of the biggest growth areas for 15-year-olds in this country. You've got 1 in 4 teenagers contracting STDs every year. There's a lot going on there with that these sexual images are teaching, and I think the country should wake up. I'm kind of glad it bolted Michael Powell out of his easy chair. And it needs to pay attention and start. I think there's a mantra also that people say, well, gee, I only watch PBS, as if that insulates them. You know, porn, legal porn, is one of the largest. It's a $1 billion industry in the world. I mean, there's a lot out there, and kids don't miss it. They learn a lot more from pictures than words. So I think it's important that people do pay attention.
Kathleen Parker, it is striking. I mean, anybody who's got a teenager in the house knows that these are the lyrics. This is the imagery that teen pop culture is absolutely saturated with. And in a way, all that happened on Sunday night was, hello, the adult world that doesn't spend much time there got an eyeful.
Well, you know, you have a point. A lot of people who had no idea that sort of stuff was going on now have an idea, and we are talking about it. I guess that's the silver lining, if there is one. I still would rather we have come to this conversation by other means. I've gotten, as I said, lots of email from people today talking about their own experiences with how this went. I have no children at home anymore. But I do remember a few years back, you know, having to talk about things that didn't really, you know, suit me for as dinner conversation. This was during the Clinton administration, so I probably don't need to go on. But these kids, they've heard it all, they've seen it all. If you block MTV at your house, they see it somewhere else. So, you know, if it means we're going to talk about it, that's fine. But there are plenty of people out there who are truly, truly outraged that they had little kids around. One person wrote me and said, you know, his little girl slapped her hands over her eyes and said, Poppy, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, a lot of explaining to do.
There's also this sort of implicit approval that goes along with showing something, showcasing something like this in the middle of this huge, not national, but international event where, you know, by the way, Janet Jackson was not doing a striptease. She was being stripped of her clothing by a male in a fairly hostile and aggressive move. And I hate that somehow that is, you know, communicated to this generation of younger people where guys think, well, no, that's cool.
And yeah, you sit there as a parent wondering, holy smokes, while I was looking the other way, is this what the country's become? And do the children think this is just fine? Listeners, you can join our conversation tonight. Is it uncool to object, or is it high time? And what would Osama say? Did you want to throw a burqa over those girls, those boys, on Sunday night? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Anna's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The issue of sexual aggression is the thing that concerns me the most. I watch this with my 10-year-old son and my 8-year-old daughter, and, you know, our conversations about sexuality are still at a very delicate and amorphous phase.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
and presumably their own understanding of what sexuality is.
Exactly. And to have, you know, depictions that somehow violence is an integral aspect of, you know, hip eroticism is extremely upsetting to me, and I don't really know how to work with it.
So, Anna, what did you do with your kids? Did you talk about it? Did you go have a Coke in the kitchen? Did you ignore it?
I was so bleeping mad that first I went to go calm down, and then I said, you know, to my children, I said, you know, that is, I started talking to them about what rape was. And that, you know, that sex has to be a consensual thing. And I'm sure I said it in a totally muddled, screwed up way. But I wanted to.
But the Super Bowl gave you this lovely opportunity. Wow. Yeah.
You know, I can't even really remember, you know, what garbled stuff I conveyed to them. But I was just trying to bring across the point that no one has any right to rip your clothing off, and that sex is supposed to be loving and private, and that was, you know, all I was really trying to say.
Not an easy message to carry in the face of that. And with all the kind of national endorsement of big national event that surrounds it, Anna, thanks very much for your call. I want to welcome into our conversation from Santa Cruz, California, Tricia Rose. She's chair of the American Studies Department at the University of California at Santa Cruz, author of the new book, Longing to Tell, Black Women Talk About Sexuality and Intimacy. Welcome back to the program, Tricia Rose. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
So were you watching Sunday night, Tricia? And what did you make of this whole panoply, not just the moment of breast with nipple ring, but kind of the whole night and tenor of what we were treated to around the heroics on the field?
Well, you know, I've got quite a different take than the callers and other guests. I did see the show. I think I only missed the actual anthem. But I did catch pretty much everything else. And I just want to pipe in on the Janet Jackson piece first and then move to a larger discussion. But, you know, I think that what's stunning about the level of outrage and response to me is how much it means that either adults, which I don't think is true, but either adults are completely not paying attention to anything going on, not just in popular culture, but in all cultural expressions and advertising and media. Or they're sort of stunned by the fact that this took place in a context where they decided it shouldn't have happened. Because I just can't imagine that all of this outrage could be going on in the context of the, again, U.S.-American commercial culture as it stands now.
I mean, when you look out at it, you see so much of this that this is unremarkable to you.
Well, actually, I think that this was far less egregious. Now, the shock value, I didn't expect it to happen. There was, again, it was about the codes of context that I think make a very big difference here. But if you look at, you know, primetime television and you look at all of the crime shows, many of which I watch because I'm fascinated by the notion of DNA evidence and other such matters, but all of the crime shows, all of the primetime television, cable networks from top to bottom, Hollywood, any number of it, women's bodies are actually on extraordinarily negative display, not necessarily a nipple, God forbid, in the United States, but their bodies in general are mutilated, murdered, raped constantly.
So, Tricia, what do you chalk up? What do you chalk this outrage level up to then? Why has this kind of?
I think because it was a real woman's breast. I think there's a real pathological, you know, sort of subversion around sexuality in this society that we can exploit it in certain formats acceptably. But when you actually see a middle-aged woman's breast, and perhaps maybe a woman of color, I don't know, but certainly a woman's breast, just sort of there when you're not supposed to see it, it just causes this deep, you know, repression to come to the foreground. Meanwhile, you've got Pamela Anderson's breasts all over the place in ways, 90% of them out, all over TV shows, you know, all year long. You know, and again, our kids are not this, you know, they're not living in a bubble. They're living in the real world. And if parents are not living there with them, then this should not be necessarily a wake-up call to say, oh, this is the end of the line, we've reached our limit, but more to say, what have I been doing with my time that I don't have any sense of where the whole entire U.S. culture is?
Jacqueline Jackson, how about it? Is this just a matter of a lot of adults with their heads in the sand and repressed sexuality flipping to outrage over a second of breast?
I think there's a lot of that. You look at commercials selling shoes, and you know that you can see women being abused in those. And not that long ago, they had the two women wrestling in the mud over a beer, which
right.
I found rather appalling. And I was especially struck by the irony that the cover story of the New York Times Sunday magazine 2 weeks ago was about the sex trade in this country.
The sex slave trade almost in the country.
Sex slaves, and they were talking 4-year-olds who are enslaved and used by pedophiles, raped like 20 times in a day. Now, whether it was 50,000 of them, as the article said, or 500, it's too many. And I think it just speaks to there's a lot going on in this country we'd like to pretend does not exist. And it's on, you know, everyday America streets. This burst through the airwaves, knocked Michael Powell and a lot of people in the face. I say, good, wake up.
I don't see this thing as being the equivalent of those horrors that you just described. I mean, to me, if this knocked them off their seat, then I'd like to know, where have they been in boardrooms and been listening to conversations in corporations and been dealing with the enormous sexual harassment that women face when they have all their clothes on in the workplace? The violence against women in this country is not generally directed by a handful of psychotics. It's at the hands of husbands, boyfriends. Child abuse against women is at the hands of fathers, stepfathers, people who are probably outraged about Janet Jackson's breast. So I think this kind of psychological separation that's happening, you know, there's sort of this wild, crazy group that's pressing the limits for
right.
us, and then there's us, this very mature and sophisticated and sexually proper people, on the other hand, is an absolute fiction.
Trish Rosen, what's the suggestion then of what you're saying? Is it that it's that, of course, it should be on display. It is our culture, so let's put it up there and fine and dandy, off we go.
No, I think that nudity has a place in society for adults. I have no problem with respectful nudity.
Mm.
I think we're obsessed with this notion of nudity being somehow automatically the equivalent of indecency.
Oh, but you know,
everything
I hear tonight is not just about a moment of breast. In fact, that seems like the least of it, but rather the kind of envelope of violence and sexually saturated entertainment that went and cynicism and mean-spiritedness throughout the whole ad profile.
That's another issue. That I'm happy. I think that, but I don't think they're the equivalent. I mean, I really do think that, you know, had Janet Jackson's breast not flopped out, I don't think that there'd be so much outrage about the rest of the ad.
Oh, I don't think so.
I think people are really upset
about the whole bump and grind routine that led up to it. You know,
right.
I really don't think it's about the breast.
Yeah, but I'm saying that they wouldn't have liked it. They might have complained, but I think the catalyst for the overall maintenance of the conversation nationally is absolutely this hot spot, as it were.
Well, the breast is the catalyst for an FCC investigation. Maybe it's the rallying image for the rest of it, but by golly, there was a lot right throughout this night that I think maybe it's a lot of naive head in the sand people who are over on the TiVo, Tricia Rose, but it sure got people worked up in a hurry. Let's invite our callers in. Chris is calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Good evening.
My larger issue is that I'm just completely baffled by why this is such a big surprise. First of all, this thing was produced by MTV. If you ever turn on MTV and just look at what's on MTV, it's soft porn. So to some extent, what do you expect? The second point that I just wanted to make was, I mean, we had to look at, I believe his name is Dennis Franz from NYPD Blue, and I think the woman from Santa Cruz pointed this out. We had to look at that for a whole season. We had to look at numerous other shows for many seasons with naked white men. And I don't understand why a flash of Janet Jackson's breasts was such a big deal. I can agree it's a family setting, but it wasn't intentional. Justin Timberlake wasn't, fondling her.
Well, they say it wasn't intentional. I don't know. We could argue about whether there was a fondling going on. But I guess the question is, Chris, is this what you expect? Is it just fine? Just bring it on. This flows right into the rest of your media life and doesn't make a blip.
You see, as Was that for Chris or for
Yeah,
us?
For Chris, please.
Oh, sorry, Chris.
My thing is, again, this, you know, I didn't know it was produced by MTV until after the fact, I'll say.
And once you knew, that was that.
Yeah, but, I mean, once everybody said, I mean, it kind of cleared it up. But to some extent, someone pointed out, you know, this is popular culture. This is what is out there. This is what sells. And that's what the Super Bowl is all about. It's about the football game. And then it's also about that halftime show and what sells. And as much as the FCC wants to go in and investigate and do all that kind of stuff now, they didn't investigate the Victoria's Secret show. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So,
yes, I do.
I mean, come on. Yeah. You've got, what, 30 girls standing up there in their underwear on stage.
Right.
Janet Jackson's fully clothed. I mean.
Yeah. We got you loud and clear, Chris.
Victoria's Secret, though. That's not necessarily what you expect at a football game.
I suppose, though maybe we're being led to expect
People come to sporting events so they can watch, you know, almost nude women, you know, cheer for the teams. I mean, it's a major component of
the cheesecake
sports.
Is built in with the cheerleaders.
The
that's true.
Cheesecake is critical to male reasons for watching the sports. It's part of the way to get around the anxieties around, you know, homosexual connections that all this male-on-male sports provokes. But, you know, commercial culture must be distinguished from popular culture. And all of these ads and even the halftime show and much of what MTV does is commercial culture, which is a commercially controlled set of images that are often derived from people's popular expressions and popular arts.
But there's no fine line between these. There's not categories of image. These images blend and blur, and our brains even take them in a very whole gulp sort of way. And
so Jackson, you're saying the impact is the same.
Image or that.
The impact is the same, then, you're saying, Jackie Jackson.
I think they do. I think we try to think we can categorize ideas and thoughts. Images, you don't do that as much with them. They really, your brain takes them in very differently than words. It's not linear. It's much, you know, the corpus callosum sort of weaves them together in there and sucks it down in. And there's not these fine lines and gradations. It's a big blur of image that hits you on a lot of levels.
Yes, and I couldn't agree more. And, in fact, the advertising industry has known that for close to 100 years,
exactly.
Which is why they have used repeatedly whatever was considered the most risque kind of representation of women in that historical moment, whatever it happened to be, to market and sell items for consumption.
Well, we saw the marker on Sunday night. Kathleen Parker, I've got to let you go in just a second, but what's your plan? Do you think it'll be changed next year after this uproar, or is this just the track we're on?
But I think, you know, maybe what we're doing here is sort of sorting out what our community standard is. That's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle while everybody was busy looking the other way, or just, you know, all of this comes on in a pretty big rush. You know, culture changes quickly, and suddenly you notice that things have gotten out of hand and gone too
Maybe
far.
There's a new standard, and we're just catching up. Kathleen Parker, thanks so much for joining us
Thank
tonight.
Thank you.
Kathleen Parker, columnist for the Tribune Media Service. You can join us tonight. 3 days on, are you steamed or no big deal? Were you offended by the Super Bowl halftime show, amused, bemused, titillated? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Here's Rhythm Nation. Janet Jackson performed at Super Bowl halftime. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Super Bowl Festival of Vulgar Sex and Madison Avenue Cynicism. You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. What about those ads? Do they have to be so cynical, so vulgar, so mean-spirited? Is this what sells now? Does it sell to you? 1-800-423-TALK. I want to turn right now to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where we're joined by Steve McKee. He's president and co-founder of the advertising agency McKee Wallwork Henderson. Good evening and welcome, Steve McKee.
Thank you.
So, Steve, I'm sure you were watching on Sunday night. You spend all your life working in the ad community. We look to the Super Bowl for, like, hit them out of the ballpark, great ads. Was this it? Is this the state of the art in the ad world?
Well, I certainly don't think I would call it the state of the art. Unfortunately, it's the state we're at. To a person, everybody I've spoken to in the industry was fairly disgusted with what they saw on Sunday night.
And yet it's almost a science. I mean, ad agencies pay a lot of attention to what works and what doesn't. Is this what really sells now?
Don't give us too much credit for that. It's almost a science, but it's very far from being a science. No, it's not what sells. One of the reasons we got what we got on Sunday night was the stakes are so high for a Super Bowl commercial.
$2 million, $2.5 million more per 30 seconds, I think?
Yeah, and not only that, but the PR that can come out of it, the talk value is so important. And clients often lose their judgment because they want so badly to be talked about. And they're getting it in this case, just not in the way they anticipated.
So they want to be edgy. But does edginess these days mean mean-spiritedness? Does it have to mean vulgarity? Is it just hard to find edge beyond that?
It doesn't have to. It's the same argument with a comedian. You know, you can get you can get laughs by telling dirty jokes, or you can get laughs by being Bill Cosby. And, he has said that he doesn't resort to that sort of thing. It's the same thing in advertising. You can have and should have intelligent, wonderful advertising, or you can go to the easy solution, which is, you know, the stuff that we saw on Sunday night.
You didn't make any of the ads on Sunday, but you've had email about them anyway, Steve. Have you got one there that you could read for us?
Yeah, there was actually an encouraging email I got from somebody, and this was very encouraging to me. But a lot of the reason for the stated reasons for this kind of puerile humor is that they're targeting young men, which I find offensive as a not too far from being a young man.
Right.
But I got an email from a 20-year-old man who said that yesterday was stupid and puerile. He said he was stuck between the purchase of a Dodge or a Chevy truck, and he finally made his choice to go with the Dodge because of the Chevy ad. And I quote him, he says, "I'm not giving a dime to a company who uses little kids for that kind of puke. I'll write them about it too." I think that's good. I think that's encouraging. I have worked in the past with clients who weren't totally aware of what their advertising agencies were doing, and when they found out about it, they put a stop to it. And that still can happen, and I'm optimistic about it.
It just might. Stuart McKee, thanks for joining us tonight. Steve McKee, president and co-founder of McKee, Walwork & Henderson, joining us there from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Stuart's calling right now from Hamilton, Bermuda. Hi, Stuart. You're on the air.
Hi. Glad to be able to listen to your show this far away.
Wonderful to have you. What's on your mind, Stuart?
Well, there are two big things for me. One, I'm black, and my community is a majority black community,
mm-hmm.
and it was very degrading to see a white male stripping the clothes off of a black female.
This is Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson you're talking about at halftime, yep?
That's right. And that may not mean a lot to some people, but it was extremely degrading, and I think it displays a degree of insensitivity to what is a major issue in the U.S. and in communities around the world.
And your other thoughts, Stuart? We'll pick it up. But you had a second one?
Yeah, the second one is just this corporate culture. CBS turned down an ad by the Move On organization, which spoke to the $500 billion deficit
mm-hmm.
in favor of an ad with a horse making gas. I mean, this is where corporate culture, the selling of everything, becomes important.
They also turned down an offer by Bono to sing a song about something to do with AIDS because it was too loaded. It didn't have the kind of message the NFL wanted, they said.
Well, if the NFL wants, if this is the kind of message that the NFL wants, then I think America as a country must look at what it uses to portray its image around the world. I mean, I think this explains why so many cultures dislike American culture, because it is dominated by the corporate desire for whatever will sell, whether it's TV or books or schools or church or politics, even the corporate ownership of moving into ownership of the public broadcasting system. I think it's degrading, and it is something that Americans must look at.
Stuart, thanks for calling in from Bermuda. Great to have you tonight. Tricia Rose, a couple things there. First, Stuart was taken aback and offended by what he saw as violent white-on-black sex with Justin and Janet. How do you read that? Is American culture beyond that kind of issue, or is that on play on the stage there?
Well, I didn't hear him exactly say violent interracial sex, but I did.
Well, I think I did pretty much. He said he was offended by a white man ripping the clothes off a black woman.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it violent by definition. I mean, see, this is the other problem. You know, let me speak to what I think he did say, because that's really what matters. He raises a very important point, which I also think is part of the American unconscious outrage here, is the racial subtext of the event. Black women's bodies have actually been at the center in this country, historically speaking, of a great deal of public violence, sexual and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, over the last 30 or 40 years, worked very hard to, in a sense, both transform ourselves as a nation, right, and correct these kinds of legacies, but we've also worked to repress our connection to those legacies. And it's my firm belief that we live much more in a historical consciousness than we like to think we do. And I think he's right to understand that level, the sense that you know, African Americans are probably not terribly happy, and other people around the world, black people, are not happy to see this kind of calloused representation because of the history. I also think, you know, Justin is, you know, Janet Jackson has been a major artist for 15 years
or longer.
Mm-hmm. She was really longer than that, in 86, 87. That's almost 20 years. She's been a substantial artist in her own right, Jackson last name notwithstanding.
Yep.
And for her to feel that she's got to tag along and sing Justin Timberlake's chorus, right, and have him sort of be sexually aggressive in relationship to her. Again, I didn't say violent; I said aggressive. You know, is actually embarrassing. She's beyond that. She's ahead of that. But the reason that this makes sense is because women artists are so sexualized in the general mass commercial culture that when they get past a certain age, they have to figure out a way to hold on to audiences with what's acceptable in the 18 to 25-year-old.
And so Madonna kisses Britney, and Janet is made naked by Justin.
All of this is an inability to deal with, you know, women's womanhood, right, and adult female sexuality as opposed to adolescent physical titillation. And I think his other point is absolutely equally as critical, which is, you know, CBS was already operating with profound political censorship, and they are not interested in us having the kind of outrage that some people are having about Janet and her breasts. They don't want us to have that level of outrage about the political and economic inequities in this nation and the consolidation of corporate power, its relationship to the federal government. These are the things that we're not supposed to get outraged about. The poverty rate among black people is the same as it was in 1968, right? All of this so-called assistance has done nothing to transform the brutal, staggering levels of poverty that everybody, numbers of people face in various communities. But
so you're saying save some of the outrage, Tricia Rose, save it. Save it for something else, something of more weight.
I'm saying that we're being manipulated into this kind of fake moral outrage over something like that, when our real ethical and moral outrage would be unleashed if they were to allow that Move On organization ad and other ads about the AIDS crisis and other matters.
Tricia, we've got it, and we're out of time. It's always great talking with you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tricia Rose, author of the new book, Longing to Tell Black Women Talk About Sexuality and Intimacy. And Jacqueline Jackson, great to have you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Jackson, executive producer of The Body Project. In a moment, one Army mom's frustration over her son going to Iraq on shaky pre-war intelligence. This is On Point. President Bush is expected to announce this week the creation of a 9-person commission that will investigate, among other things, the faulty intelligence used to justify the invasion of Iraq. Bush has been under pressure from both Republicans and Democrats to launch a probe after the chief weapons inspector in Iraq, David Kay, said pre-war intelligence was almost entirely wrong. For San Diego writer Suze Diaz, hearing that the United States went to war on bad information has been particularly hard. Because of that faulty intelligence, her 20-year-old son, an Army private, is now in Iraq under the constant threat of enemy fire. In this radio diary, Sue Diaz shares the frustration she felt as she learned that America's pre-war intelligence was flawed.
The picture of the young soldier stayed with me all that day and the next. It's with me still, though the morning paper where I saw it now rests in the recycling bin. The picture was near the bottom of the first page of Section B. The headline with it read, County Native, 20, killed in Iraq, believed in what he was doing. Just before turning to that section, I'd read another story nearer the front page. In that one, David Kay, the former chief weapons inspector in Iraq, said that after months of searching, no weapons of mass destruction had been found. His exact words were, "I don't think they existed." I thought about that as I studied the small color photo that accompanied the headline about the fallen soldier. I let my eyes rest on the set of his jaw and the seriousness in his eyes. He almost looked as if he believed a fierce expression would somehow offset the smoothness of his face, that if he managed to look tough enough, no one would notice that so much of life still lay ahead of him. And in that young man's face, I saw my sons, also 20 years old, in the army, in the infantry, and stationed somewhere in the Sunni Triangle. Though I didn't want to, I read the rest of the story. Learned that the young man had joined the army in response to the September 11th terrorist attacks, that he had been killed by mortar fire on a base 35 miles northeast of Baghdad. People who knew him said he felt he was doing the right thing in a hostile land. He seemed proud of that, the boy's father said. We're finding some peace in that somehow. But I know if a similar fate were to befall my son, I would never know that kind of peace. I've been against this war from the beginning, but out of respect for my son's line of work, made a point not to share my feelings with him. These days, though, when we talk via instant messaging, he's the one who speaks up against the president and the policies that have put him and his unit in a round-the-clock war that has no clear battle lines. What were those guys in Washington thinking? Pretty much sums up the view from his vantage point. When he joined the Army in the autumn of 2002, a paycheck, not patriotism, was his prime motivation. That, plus the promise of travel and adventure and time to figure out what he wanted to do after the four-year stint he'd signed on for. He bought a new laptop just before heading for Europe, where he was based before the war. He had plans to learn more about web design in his off hours, when he wasn't using his Eurorail pass. The front lines of life, not history, were where he wanted to be. He's grown up a lot in the past few months, and he'll probably agree that he needed to. He'll say now that he's proud that he's been able to handle the situations that come with being in a combat zone. Proud that he's learned to cope as best as anyone can with the chaos, the boredom, the bad army food. And for all those down-to-earth reasons, this mother of his is proud of him, too. I admire the courage it takes to keep putting one dusty boot in front of the other on the uncertain roads he walks today. But I never believed the administration's claims that Iraq posed a direct threat to America's security. Never believed that this war would be worth its cost, in dollars or in lives. I viewed the Bush policy of preemption in Iraq as, at best, a large-stakes gamble in geopolitics that was simultaneously arrogant and naive, or at worst, all about oil. And now when I see the newspaper photos of the young Americans this war is bringing home in flag-draped boxes, I see other pictures, too. The ones that will never be taken, of weddings and birthdays and all those other moments life gives us to say cheese. And the toll of this conflict becomes as vivid to me as the piercing brown eyes of the soldier in Section B. American to my core, I see photos like his and feel many things. But in the light of recent revelations, the least among them is pride.
Sue Diaz is a writer and regular contributor to On Point. She lives in San Diego, California. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakravarti, Eileen Amata, Julie Jopp, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Michael Garth. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.